This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we're going to check in on a conference of global warming deniers in Washington and hear what influential politicians have to say about defunding climate research. But first, developing a drug is no easy task. First, you need to identify a disease target. Then the drug needs to be created in the lab. And after that, it's years of clinical trials, hundreds of millions of dollars before the drug finds its way to patients. But could there be a shortcut? Could we use off-the-shelf drugs that are already FDA-approved to speed up the process? And could that process lead to new ways to treat chronic and rare diseases? My next guest is looking into just that. She is investigating if diabetes could be treated with a common tuberculosis vaccine. Dr. Denise Faustman is the Director of Immunobiology at Mass General, and she's also Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Med School. Welcome back to Science Friday. It's been a while.
Thank you for inviting me.
Last time we talked to you, you were curing mice of diabetes. That was about 10 years ago.
That's exactly right. So from mice to humans, it's a big step.
Tell us about how you are going to test a drug called a vaccine called BCG.
Yeah. So BCG is not very well known in the United States, but on a global level, it's the most common vaccine administered to children on a yearly basis for tuberculosis, not for diabetes.
Mm-hmm. So what makes you think it would work on diabetes?
Well, BCG, whether you got vaccinated today or I got vaccinated, causes an immune response. And in your blood after vaccination, you make a hormone or a cytokine, as we call it, in a more specialized way, called TNF. And we think there's a number of autoimmune diseases where you need to elevate the levels of TNF. So instead of making TNF, which is kind of hard to do, why not use a 100-year-old vaccine to do it for us?
And so you have clinical trials that are coming up?
Yes. So we have started phase two clinical trials now with oversight with the partnership with the FDA and our own institution. So this is exciting times to try to bring a cheap generic drug forward into people with longstanding type 1 diabetes.
So what are you looking for in this phase two trial?
Yeah, so often these trials look for subtle endpoints, just subtle endpoints like did the pancreas make a little more insulin? But we're looking for a very solid and respectable endpoint in these trials, and that's to change your hemoglobin A1C. And as most people with diabetes certainly know, your hemoglobin A1C is an average of your blood sugar over the last 3 months. And when you have diabetes, it goes up. And when your hemoglobin A1C goes up, you, over the passage of time, suffer devastating complications. So the goal is to get blood sugars under better control, and the goal is to monitor it with this simple blood test.
Mm-hmm. Now, diabetes is an autoimmune disease. You said that you think you might be able to use the same kind of treatment for other autoimmune diseases, such as
multiple sclerosis. So the concept of moving forward with these cheap generic drugs has really taken off in Europe and Australia. And in Europe, there's even phase three trials going on in Italy using multiple doses of the BCG vaccine in multiple sclerosis. And soon there will also be trials at the NIH looking at another autoimmune disease called Sjogren's syndrome. Mm-hmm. So there's a global momentum now to try to use this cheap intervention to change the course of autoimmunity and some work also in changing the course of allergies.
Why don't we see the big drug companies doing this instead of you?
Well, that's a good question. So, that's the tough question. When you develop something that's inexpensive and maybe in the big picture will only require limited dosing, there's less enthusiasm than like the news we heard yesterday on a cholesterol drug, which you'd have to take every day. So luckily, these global efforts with all these trials going on now are centered in academia, and there's a momentum within academia to get these drugs approved.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring on now someone else who's working in a similar area. She's working in rare diseases. Christina Waters is CEO and founder of Rare Science and vice president of applied advocacy at Agility Clinical. She's based out in San Diego, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks, Ira. It's great to be here.
Now, your organization helps to connect patients with rare diseases to researchers. What are the obstacles these patients face when they're looking for treatments?
Right. So we're a really interesting newly formed nonprofit, and that's exactly what we do, is that we start bridging a critical mass of information to start understanding the biology of these rare diseases. And the first step is actually building a patient community, and it can be international. We have populations where we start with one child and then gradually build that population to maybe 50. And it definitely has no geographic boundaries.
Mm-hmm. So like Dr. Faustman, do you believe that there are drugs out there that are off the shelf, on the shelf, that you could match up genetically and say, hey, maybe it'll work on these kids? Is that what you're thinking? Christina, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was to Dr. Faustman.
No.
I thought I couldn't answer my own question.
Yeah.
Of course she does.
Absolutely. I think that what's happening is that if we stop categorizing disease by these names and we start categorizing disease by biological process, then we're going to be able to start looking at currently approved drugs and then being able to apply it to a very urgent need that we're seeing with children especially.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get approval from the FDA and the incentives, big pharma to use drugs for these treatments? Is there any way to do that?
Well, so right now we're seeing a lot of different legislative activities. We've had, in 1983, there was a big incentive for development of the Orphan Act to, move into more of these rare diseases and have them fast-tracked and approved. And then just recently, we've had a movement of an approval of what's called the Open Act, and that incentivizes industry to take their commonly approved drugs and with a minimal package to expand it into rare diseases. So I think that everybody realizes that there is a new approach that's definitely needed, and especially for children. And if I may, I think that why we really need to do this is because, there's 7,000 rare diseases. 50% of these are made up with kids. And then 30% of those kids do not celebrate their fifth birthday. And if you align that with our current process, which is 14 years of a drug development timeline that takes $2 billion, it doesn't add up. Mm. And it's just unacceptable when we're talking about identifying new therapies for children, especially with rare disease.
Mm-hmm. Denise, where do you go from here? What do you have to wait for? How long will the results come in? I know you've had good results in mice, correct?
Yes, we had fabulous results in mice. So many happy mice around the world, and many labs around the world duplicated the mouse data. So there's happy, formerly diabetic mice all over the place. But the question is, what about happy people? So we did a phase 1 trial, and the biomarkers we studied, which are really signals that the drug's doing what it's supposed to do, which is kill the bad white blood cells and induce the good white blood cells, and also a little bit of signal that the pancreas could make insulin again after 15 years of the disease. We're now moving into phase 2 trials. And so those trials take a little bit longer, because what we learned from the MS trials in Europe was that the effect of BCG keeps getting better and better with the passage of time. So very limited dosing is causing relapses, the prevention of relapses in that disease, and improvement of the MRI brain scans. So in these phase 2 type 1 diabetes trials, we'll be watching the people 5 years for a clinically significant marker to move, the hemoglobin A1C.
Mm-hmm. And Christina, what are you waiting to see? What is a landmark for you, for your organization?
Yeah, I think that what we're really aiming to do is work with a whole new approach, and that is bringing together this new movement of where patients are and patient parents and advocates are really taking the stand and very empowered to move these new directions and approaches to drug discovery. So what we plan to do over the next year is to launch 2 to 3 new projects that are collaborations directly with parents and these foundations to drive this new approach for repositioning of possibly already approved drugs so that we can close that gap of time between discovery to actual clinical application.
Let me go in about a minute that I have left. I already have a bunch of people who want to know, can they get in on these trials somehow? Denise, Christina, what's
sure.
the answer to that?
Absolutely. We love people reaching out to us and connecting. They can email us at diabetestrial@partners.org, or they can go to our webpage and register. And that webpage is Faussman, my last name, FaussmanLab.org. And either those two mechanisms are a phone call to 617-726-4084. We'll connect them into a site for registration.
And Christina, a website for you?
Yes, rarescience.org. Very simple.
And there you have it. I want to thank you both for taking time to be with us today. Denise Faussman is the Director of Immunobiology at Mass General Hospital East, Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Med School. Christina Waters, CEO and founder of Rare Science, Vice President of Applied Advocacy at Agility Clinical. Thank you, and good luck to both of you. We'll be checking
thank
back.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for
thank
having
you very
us.
Much.
You're welcome.